Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name's Amelia, and today we have another completely awesome guest on the show. We have Jasmine, who is a business development manager at Double Helix. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I don't know. I feel like that title may not encapsulate everything that you do. So I'm very, very curious. What is your job?
It's a lot of things, and business development is one of them. So Double Helix is CSIRO, Science Magazine for Kids. And Double Helix is really there to get kids excited about STEM, so science, technology, engineering and maths, and get them considering careers in STEM. So my job is a new job with a new title, and it's a new role. So I've been trying to work out what it is in a sense myself. But the big thing is growing Double Helix as a program to make it financially sustainable. As a kids science magazine, it's pretty hard to make ends meet, and my job's, you know, trying to turn it around a bit. So there are a few responsibilities that wouldn't normally be on the plate of a business development manager. Things like managing the editorial team for Double Helix, so the editor, the editorial assistant, and being a bit more involved in the development of science content.
It sounds fascinating. I honestly was under the impression that no magazines are financially like sustainable in this modern era.
Well, there are magazines out there that are doing it, and I suppose the approach is to look at how to take on additional projects and tasks, activities that will help support the publishing as a broader business.
So maybe looking beyond just like a physical magazine, could we be looking at like a whole spectrum of potential Double Helix-ness?
Yes, and already there is a bit of a spectrum of Double Helix-ness. I like that turn of phrase. So already we've been doing some children's books, kids' books doing quite well. Parents like to keep kids off screens. We've also got a great website, also a digital version of the magazine. And I think there are more opportunities for us to do things in the digital space. So fingers crossed, we'll find a project in that space and there'll be something exciting coming.
It sounds awesome. It also sounds like quite a big job. Like if you're managing people, you're doing some of like being aware of the content that's going into the magazine and I guess trying to, I mean, yes, it's business development, but it's sort of like exciting blue sky growth of this product that, you know, I grew up with, Double Helix. I think like a lot of the listeners will have. Yeah, it's really exciting to hear that it might sort of expand out into a bigger world.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. So the first 3 months of my job was really this broad consultation and a chance to speak to all these amazing people with great experience in publishing, in communications, in education, and pulling these exciting ideas for Double Helix together. And I pulled together this report, had heaps of ideas in it, lots of opportunities. There's almost too much stuff. So the next step is working out what is actually viable and what will bring us the best returns.
Yeah. That is a recurring theme on this podcast, actually, is people having awesome opportunities and everything and having to develop the real hard skill of saying no to even exciting things. But if they lead you off track, they're not necessarily a good thing. Sounds like practicing some no's might be hard.
Yes, I love saying yes to a lot of things. And I think that will come up through this podcast as well as we talk about, you know, the opportunities I've had to get where I am now. I've had to say yes to a lot of things, but I think the next little while will be honing the opposite skill, being able to be strategic about picking just a few things that will make the biggest impact.
Are there any, you know, maybe even not confirmed, but hopeful things on the horizon for Double Helix that you're particularly excited for?
There are lots of things I'm excited for. I think a bigger presence at events is going to be one thing I'm excited about. So we're testing taking the magazine to more science events so that people can get access to it and then hopefully have a think about subscribing to the magazine as well. So we'll see how that goes. We're going with CSIRO communicators out to a few places like the Avalon Air Show and Pride Fair for Mardi Gras. So it'll be really nice to see the magazines out there at those events.
That's really cool. Okay, so you got to keep an eye out, people, for Double Helix at all sorts of events, really. And, you know, make sure you give a bit of hype to the team, because it is a bit hard sometimes selling a physical magazine in a very digital world now.
We also have a digital magazine, so via our website, if people are keen to pick up a digital copy, it is possible.
What does an average day at work look like for you?
Well, it hasn't really settled into average yet, and I think it will change as time progresses. So as I was saying, we've been doing this consultation process. I think over the next little while, it'll be more targeted meetings with stakeholders, and then I guess continuing to manage the team. So like today, I got to sign off on some pages for the next magazine. It's always nice to get that sneak peek into what's coming up in terms of content and having a say in terms of what's on the cover and things like that. So that was today, and also working on some digital marketing ideas. So that was about trying to work out if we could get animated GIFs into our advertising. So something different again, looking at tech specs, and I'm also working on a website refresh project. So there's that technical side and that content side and the strategic side. So it's really fun. No 2 days are really the same.
It sounds super varied. Yeah. That's awesome. What is it about your job that like gets you up in the morning and gets you going?
It's the impact of Double Helix, I think. As you were saying, you read Double Helix growing up. I read Double Helix growing up. It's really inspired a lot of people to consider careers in STEM or just be excited and passionate about science. I actually really enjoyed another episode of yours with Steph McLennan, the Antarctic geoscientist, and she mentioned Double Helix was just one little piece of the puzzle on her journey. Double Helix can't take the credit for, you know, supporting anyone through the entire journey. I'd love to. We can't. But it's nice to be there to support people on that journey and help them feel part of something bigger. So that's the stuff that gets me out of bed in the morning.
I think it's actually a really important part of the whole ecosystem in Australia. Like there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that help people consider careers in STEM. And I think I can't think of something that would come before Double Helix in Australia, like age-wise.
It's that 8 to 14-year-olds is the target audience. So, you know, we are trying to get to people when they're young and support them from that young age. When they have that amazing curiosity about the world and are still asking those great questions. My daughter, she's 8. So I asked her a couple of days ago, you know, she's on school holidays at the moment. So I said, you know, give me a couple of questions you'd have that you'd ask about science. She's like, why does science exist?
Oh,
like, ooh, that's a big one. That was not what I was expecting.
You're expecting, why is the sky blue?
Yeah. I'm not sure I gave her a very succinct answer to that one, but we'll work on it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that could be a whole theme for a magazine.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a really complicated one.
But I guess more specifically in terms of Double Helix impact, we know that 84% of our readers, according to our last survey in 2020, are saying that they're more interested in science than before they started reading Double Helix, which I think is just great. And we also tried to reach out to past readers of Double Helix, so people who are adults now but read Double Helix growing up. That was a survey we did back in 2018, and we found that of the respondents, and there were more than 500 of them, 66% of the respondents were saying they were either working in STEM or studying STEM.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we were really happy with that.
Yeah. That's so cool. And that's an amazing number of respondents as well, like down the track. That's pretty impressive. How have you ended up in this role? Like, what was your vision in high school or your dream versus like the path that got you to where you are now?
Oh, my vision in high school. I was pretty confused in high school. I wanted to be a concert cellist for a while. I also wanted to be a costume designer. And I wanted to be a geneticist. So I was really trying to find my way in terms of which of those paths I wanted to take. And there are a few things that helped me along the way to decide science was the thing. I had some great science teachers for a starter. Mr. Williams, shout out to him. Mrs. Munro. Yep, they were great. But Double Helix was a big part of my life in high school, as it is now. Geez, that's 30 years of my life. Of the 40 years that Double Helix has been around. So, yeah, it's definitely something that is dear to my heart, Double Helix. But I was also part of some other CSIRO programs. So I did the student research scheme that was where we got paired up with some scientists to go out and do a research project. So I had some scientists based at Curtin Uni. One was totally into spiders and the other was totally into scorpions. And we went out to the bush and tried some different trapping solutions. We tried three different trapping solutions to see which one would work best. So, you know, did it affect the type of invertebrates we caught, capture more or less? So, yeah, we did. We went out and set the traps, went back and picked them up. And then I got to look through a microscope and count them out and write up the results. So that was some really excellent hands-on experience that really made me appreciate biology in particular. I did some great work experience in genetics at the Lions Eye Institute, which was definitely something that made me more passionate about studying genetics at uni. But perhaps I guess one of the biggest things was the opportunity to study at a uni in Sydney. So, yeah, having grown up in Perth, I was ready to take a leap after school and get out there and see another part of Australia.
And so you landed in Sydney and you managed to make the choice between cello design and genetics?
I made the decision before I went. So cello ended up falling away a little bit. I think I realised how intensely focused that kind of work is and how particularly competitive it was in a certain way. I applied for uni and I also applied for costume design courses and I got into both. So that was where I really made the decisions. And yeah, it was the opportunity to travel that I think just pushed me over the line. It's funny how it can go one way or another based on something that, you know, in hindsight seems less important about the topic than the opportunity. But I was always one that loved doing science and arts and kind of had that split of subjects all the way through high school. And it was really the first time I had to choose, but when I got to uni. And then I went across to the University of New South Wales to study advanced science. And I reckon it was 6 months before I changed into a science arts double degree because I just wasn't happy with doing just one or the other. And that allowed me to choose from a buffet of subjects, and I just was fortunate enough to be able to follow my interests. And that actually affected how things went later on because the plant genetics subjects had been cancelled and that was the area I was most interested in. So I started picking up more history and philosophy of science subjects, which was, in hindsight, honing my storytelling experiences in that world of science. But you know, it really did put me on this different path. I just kind of veered off and ended up doing my honours in history and philosophy of science. And I do remember my mum's, so what are you going to do with that? No, what kind of career does that lead to? Yeah. And I think at the time I was just happily enjoying studying. I've always been a lover of studying. So I think it was about 2 weeks before I finished my honours that I finally panicked and went, oh, crap, I've got to get a job. Yep. So that was the wake-up call. And I applied for two jobs at that point, you know, just before I handed in that honours thesis. And one of them was with CSIRO and one of them was with Questacon, and they were both science communication jobs. And CSIRO got back to me first and offered me this job as an education officer out of the Darwin Education Centre. So I spent a couple of years doing hands-on science shows for schools across the Northern Territory. again, you know, I was ready to travel. And this was the opportunity to get out there and do some travel, see a beautiful part of Australia that is otherwise quite remote and difficult to get to while doing this great science work, which was also quite creative as well because it had that presentation aspect. And I'd been doing a bunch of amateur theatre throughout my uni days, which actually fed into the application I did for that job, as did my random customer service jobs that I enjoyed having through my uni days. Things like I was teaching ceramic painting at a studio in Crow's Nest in Sydney. So all of those little things were picking up skills that became useful down the track. So from there, I was still studying while I was doing that work because I can't help it. I'm always studying something. So I did a graduate certificate in writing and editing and also a graduate certificate in marketing communications. And both of those helped me get a job then back in Canberra with what was Science by Email at the time, which was a Double Helix related program. I was doing that and yeah.
Is Science by Email and mm-hmm. then migrated across to Double Helix?
Yes. So this is an interesting part of the story in that I put my hand up for the Helix editor role and I didn't get it. And I applied even thinking that I wasn't ready for it. And I think it was absolutely the right thing to do because I got great feedback on the application. And the person who went into that role went on maternity leave within a few months of them getting that job. So I was in that backfill position for them at Science by Email, and then they managed to shuffle me across to the editor role at the Helix for a while, and that's how I got my foot in the door in that editing role. And then another magazine editor went on maternity leave, and then I filled in for them. That was at Scientrific, which was a younger kids science magazine, and I think that's where we met, wasn't it, Amelia?
I think so. Back in the day where I was doing some writing, yeah, about some all sorts of things that happen.
Yeah. And over time with reshuffles and restructures, I ended up managing the whole group of publications there. So that was the Helix and Scientrific, Science by Email, Maths by Email. And then eventually they've been reshuffled again. And now we have Double Helix as the magazine and Double Helix Extra as our email newsletter.
And who knows what's coming in the future?
Who knows what's going to be next? That's right.
What was some of the stuff you did up in the NT? That sounds like a lot of people's dream job that they don't know exists.
Yes, and I'm not sure that kind of job exists now. I think it was of a time. So I would do school holiday science shows. I'd write them and deliver them at the Science Museum there. And I'd go out to schools and run specific activities in the classroom. So there were various topics. There were some on, you know, the human body, on energy, across the sciences, a whole range of different things. There was a science fair, the Top End Science Fair, that I used to help coordinate. It was a real mixed bag of different, you know, performance and I guess school engagement, community engagement as well.
Did you get to go to some of the cool remote places?
Absolutely. Went out to a few communities and spent a fair bit of time based out of Alice Springs as well. So I'd be there for about a month each year. Yeah, but managed to travel down a lot of the centre to Katherine, out to Nhulunbuy as well, and a few other places like that. It was really beautiful. I really missed the land.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. It's very, very special. Yeah. That sounds like a cool way to explore it. Yep.
Yeah, it was an amazing way to explore it.
And it sort of feels like now in the role that you're in with the business development and that sort of forward thinking and creative thinking, like you're really pulling like those creative skills that you get to combine the science and the creativity.
I do, yes. Particularly in that editorial role, I was doing a lot of that you know, I was writing, editing, image selection, shaping themes and content, working with designers. So there was a lot more of that. And so stepping into this business development role was a really hard decision because it has changed the type of creativity that I've had to employ. But it's been good in a different way. So it's more visionary and that big picture thinking and imagining the possibilities and working out how to make them a reality, although I'm very new, so we haven't made that much of it a reality yet, but I'm hoping we will. Yeah, so it's a different skill set, but I'm excited to see where it all goes and to use that different type of creativity because I do see how important it is. It's vital to keep the program alive if that's and that is something, you know, I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, we have to keep, the world does keep changing and we have to keep adapting and moving with it quite a lot. Yeah. Were there any sort of key events in this path that like were real aha moments? You already mentioned some good teachers, so.
Yeah, in terms of the aha moments, I think I have listed off quite a few of them already. Mm. Yeah, the teachers, I think. And I think learning to put my hand up for everything, even when I don't feel qualified for it, has been a really important learning for me throughout this process. I'm just there going, yes, that looks like a great opportunity. I'm going to give it a go. What's the worst thing that could happen? And usually it's somebody saying no, which isn't really that bad. I mean, it's not nice at the time, but, you know, there's usually something else down the track. So, and I love the surprise when it does work out and there's something that I can do because I put my hand up for it, even if I think I'm not ready for it. Sometimes I am. Like the Helix editor role. And I survived. Like it was really hard initially because I really did feel like I was thrown in the deep end. And I think we grow and learn the fastest when we are thrown in the deep end.
Yes, growth is often that somewhat uncomfortable feeling. Mm.
Yeah, yep. That is also how I felt when I went into this new job, but I think it's a good thing. I think if we get too comfortable, that's when it's time to shake it up.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any advice you wish you could give young Jasmine?
Heaps of it. But I think another good one is making sure that you diversify. So have it think about all the different things that could be done, because sometimes there have been times in my life where work has been my absolute everything. And I've worked out that, you know, making sure I have good hobbies, good family support, good friendship, it means that there's always somewhere for respite. You know, there's always somewhere to rest and go to so you can come back refreshed to work when things are hard. It's been a really hard lesson for me early on, but now I found that balance is exactly what I need on a regular basis.
Work-life balance is a thing for a reason.
Sure is.
Who would have thought?
And I think it's hard when, you know, you're working on a project that is so dear and, you know, as we were saying with Double Helix, it is almost like family, or it is almost like something that is really personal to me because it has been a part of my life for so long. So, and, you know, it's natural in any job or in anything you do that there are going to be tough times. So making sure that there are ways to take that step back is really important.
That's pretty good advice. What about any advice for young people maybe who are graduating from science communication courses and are really interested in a role like yours? Have you got any advice for them?
Yes, I think what I do is really very niche. So looking at skills that are helpful on the way and finding a job where the skills match what you want to do is going to be the real trick. So what I was looking to do throughout, like I said, you know, I was doing some amateur theatre and then worked out that I was learning my presentation skills through that. I was doing that in a community context at the ceramic studio, as well as, you know, learning various skills throughout my university study. It was working out, you know, what skills I wanted to have and then finding out what jobs would match those skills to make me happy. And for me, it was really about knowing that I needed that balance of science and the arts and finding a job where I could make that work. So looking at it from that perspective, I think, is really important.
Yeah. So it's not just the skills that you get in your course really at all. It's also the other life skills that you develop.
Yes, often. Absolutely. Yeah, somewhat, and taking those other opportunities outside.
Are there any myths or misconceptions you've come across about what you do or Double Helix? Is it something where there are myths?
Yes, there are definitely myths. Oh. It's been a couple of years. I think people are more savvy about the nature of children's magazine publishing now, but at one stage people were like, what do you do with all the money you make at Double Helix?
I love it.
So, you know, CSIRO expects us to operate as a self-sustaining business. So we do need to make ends meet, and it's really hard, as we've already said. But I suppose more broadly, I think it's really important that we support content creators. So whether it's educational content or entertainment, whether it's, you know, something written or something we're listening to or something we're watching, finding ways to support our content creators is vitally important. And sure, it's nice if you do have the money. Yes, please buy a subscription or a product or something to support us or other content creators that you love. But there are also a bunch of ways you can support people making content that don't involve money. So it's spreading the word. It's telling other people about a piece of content you love. You know, at Double Helix, it's signing up to our free email newsletter, which has, you know, great news and activities and a quiz and a brain teaser, that kind of thing. It lands in your email inbox for free. The subscribers we have to that really help support the program. So, you know, heading to our website and signing up would be fantastic.
And just a reminder, listeners, that was free.
Yep, that's doublehelix.csiro.au. Yep, go for your free email.
Free email, because then they can show the numbers, and the numbers are important too.
Yeah.
And when the email comes, open email, right? And
Click
absolutely. On the things in the email.
It's like download podcast, listen to podcast.
It's like that, but...
is important because it is getting increasingly difficult, particularly with all that stuff out there on the internet. AI is also going to be a new big thing that's going to impact content creators. So there's a lot going on in that space. So any support you can throw that way is really appreciated.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about AI for Double Helix.
We had an AI issue in December. It was amazing. I really enjoyed helping put it together. It was my last issue as editor. We had illustrators collaborating with AIs. We had our fiction writer collaborating with an AI to write the sci-fi. It was a really interesting way of testing how our freelancers, our staff could work with AI in a way that helps support the creation of content rather than detracting from from what they're creating as a or from the job that they were doing. So, yeah, I was really excited to see how that went. I think there are going to be elements of it that we're going to have to keep continuing to consider. It's not something that's going to stop. It's definitely something we're going to continue testing and playing in that space and working out how it's going to work for us.
I will be very curious to check back in a year or so and see how that sort of, how the dust settles, because there is... I think when it's done right and when you do see it as collaboration with an AI, you can come up with some things that you wouldn't have by yourself, and they're not, I don't know, they still need people, I think.
I think so too. Yep, so working out the recipe for collaboration is going to be the trick to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of exciting questions and ideas in this space and things that we're all going to have to work through and nut out, you know, from how do we recognize content creators who are fed into the AI, from copyright issues. There's heaps of that kind of stuff going on. And with the speed that the technology is moving, we're going to have to do it on the fly. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what comes out, and I think we can find ways to make it exciting and work better for everyone. I'm being optimistic here.
I love it. Oh, there's plenty of people out there being negative. You don't need to. Yeah, interesting. Okay. No, I really like that. And I just love this myth that you were rolling around in money from your kids' magazine. Nice idea. But I do have to, I think Double Helix deserves credit, because they do pay writers, and paying your artists is incredibly important. So high five for doing that.
Oh, thanks.
Is there anything else we haven't talked about that you'd like to share?
I can talk a little bit about some of the hobbies that have supported me, I suppose, through the time where work is difficult. Yeah, so being a lover of science and the arts, sometimes the arts aspect is still not quite enough in what I do. So I have to come at it from a different perspective. And music is something that I've continued to do over the years. So at the moment, I'm playing with a group called the Ukeds, which is a virtual ukulele ensemble. And we released a single late last year, which was really fun. So we all did our own recordings and sent them in, and they got compiled into this great single. It's called Lighty Die, and you can check it out at ukeds.com. The person who's running this program, James Hill, he also organized us to get this great lyric video that was, speaking of AI, contributed to by an AI called Midjourney. So it's been really interesting to be part of this big virtual online project that has people from all around the world, and do something musical in that space as a bit of fun. And I also play in a band. That's the other thing I do. So I'm still playing cello. I never became a concert cellist, but I do play a little bit of cello around Canberra and sing a few songs in a band called The New Black.
That's awesome. So the Ukeheads, I'm assuming that's a ukulele thing.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. And The New Black.
Yeah.
That's cool. How many people are in this Ukeheads thing?
Oh, I'm not sure how many are currently contributing. It'll be a couple of hundred. There's space for more people to join. There's like 1,879, I believe, Ukeheads. It is tied in around this art project as well. So every Ukehead is actually a little illustration. So I have my own unique illustrated Ukehead, which is attached to an NFT, so a non-fungible token for those who are aware of those. I haven't seen as many NFT projects around lately, but they were pretty big in the last couple of years, and had all sorts of interesting technology implications, you know, being on the blockchain and things like that.
How fascinating. That's very creative.
Yeah, it was really a creative project, which is what drew me to it. The coordinator, James Hill, is a great ukulele player as well, and quite an amazing personality. So I really love his community focus as well. So I was really interested to see how this online community was going to work. And we do have a Slack that we talk in, and I'm going to be catching up in Melbourne with a couple of the other Melbourne Ukeheads hopefully next week. So yeah, I was just really fascinated by the project generally, and it's been really fun to be a part of and see this different approach to art, music making, trying to find a way to, I guess, sustain artists as well, a different business model through the NFTs, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's fantastic. And we're hoping to put out an album hopefully later this year or early next year. I'm not sure what the timeline is on that, but, you know, ideally, there'll be something really lovely and tangible that comes out of it. The idea is to print it on vinyl as well. And, you know, that's just a bucket list item for me. You know, firstly, it was releasing a single, and then it's like making an album. And not only that, having it printed on vinyl. Wow, how cool is that?
And, like, it's all the way from vinyl to NFTs. Like, that is such a spectrum.
Every piece of technology you can think of, throw it at it.
All right. I sort of feel like you're, like, even these things that you're doing to recharge and connect with the artist side and all that sort of thing, all of that will still be great fodder for trying to come up with new ideas for Double Helix too, because, like, some of that's really at the cutting edge. And, yeah, it's sort of interesting seeing how people's hobbies can then feed into their work life and make their work better.
Absolutely. And I think that is a really important thing to take away, is that, you know, look to all areas of your life for inspiration in your work.
Yeah. And it's not time wasted, I think, is really important. People often think that the time that they spend in enjoying things is somehow wasted.
Mm. But wasting some time is good too.
It is.
I think it's actually really important. I find I have to get quite bored to be at my most creative. And that's something I'm struggling to teach my daughter now, because, you know, it's different than when I was a kid. You know, she can watch whatever she wants to watch whenever she wants to watch it on a screen, or there's, you know, so many computer games, all that entertainment. You know, she doesn't really get bored. And that boredom is just so important to find that creative place inside. Even now, if I'm doing some songwriting or things like that, I make an actual effort to get to a point where I'm quite bored so that the best ideas can bubble up.
I think there's going to be like an increase in needing to learn how to curate your own boredom, which sounds like such a weird thing to say, but it's actually really important. Maybe there's a lesson there somehow. We can teach people to be bored.
Maybe that can be the new line of business.
Yep. We'll take you on a retreat where you get to be bored. What kind of music do you play with the cello?
It's usually a combination of pop, rock and folk. So not classical anymore, although I just love classical music. And now I play classical on piano, because I started learning piano when I was 4 years old and gave it up, and I regret it. So I finally got back to piano lessons. I'm like, oh, all this stuff that I dreaded as a kid, now I'm like, yes, I'm going to go back to it. So classical's for piano, but, yeah, I play cello in this pop rock folk band called The New Black.
That sounds like great fun as well. Is the rest of your family creative?
So my husband likes to play role-playing games. So people are usually most familiar with D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, as a role-playing game. He doesn't play that one, but he is a very creative storyteller through other role-playing games. And my daughter is a big fan of crafting. So that's what we often do together, crafty activities and a few science experiments.
Oh, it's very easy to slide from one into the other.
I do love something that covers both, but no one will be surprised to hear that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Because we do actually have to wrap up, have you got a shout out for someone, a virtual high five for someone or someone who you think's doing an awesome job and just deserves all the listeners' virtual high fives?
Yeah, I'd love to give a shout out to the Double Helix Sustainability Squad. So they're a group of young achievers doing some amazing things for the environment. And I'd like to shout out to Annie Lee in particular, because I'm just so inspired by her blend of science, business and sustainability. So she's 16, but she's built this business from one succulent leaf into an amazing business. So she sells all these plants and other bits and pieces through her Melbourne Plant Project Instagram. And with some support from her parents and school friends, she also sells these plants through the markets. And all the money she raises from it is donated to Food Ladder, which is a charity that helps Australians living in remote and disadvantaged areas, and it helps them to grow fresh food. So I'd say, you know, check out Annie's succulents at melbourneplantproject.org.
And we will include a link to that in the show notes, because that sounds so cool and she definitely deserves high fives.
Yeah, And the pictures are great on Instagram. I just love them. You know, there's all these different tiny succulents that can be used for all occasions. You know, she's doing, you know, corporate events, baby showers, weddings, all that kind of stuff is the plan. And, you know, raising money for such a great cause too. So good on her.
So cool. And so that's ridiculously entrepreneurial for a 16-year-old.
I think so. And I just love the blend, as I said, of that creativity, the science, the business. Wow, you know, I don't think at 16 I would have been that savvy to be able to do something so amazing.
No, but in fairness, they also have a little bit of like enabling technology with things like Instagram. So we're going to lean on that.
But yeah, go Annie.
High fives to Annie. Amazing work. And the Sustainability Squad, that's also an awesome initiative. So fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jasmine. This has been absolutely delightful. And we can't wait to see what Double Helix comes up with next.
Thanks, Amelia.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee, head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.